Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
You're in the place where mysteries and the missing meet, where conspiracies lurk around every corner. Welcome to the Deep Dark Truth.
Welcome back to the Deep Dark Truth. I'm Mikey.
I'm Mo.
I'm Chip.
And today we're talking about murder. Because that's all we really ever talk about. Even if we're not talking about murder, we bring murder.
That's very unfortunate. I feel like maybe we shouldn't have a sponsorship for this episode because of all the murder.
I feel strongly that this is a good rule. I've chosen older murders. There's two we'll touch on and one that's big, and two of those are older.
So are these murders that were committed on Halloween?
Or like around Halloween?
Two of them, one the main course and one of the samplers, is on Halloween itself. The other was near Halloween, but Halloween is involved.
So, Chip, how about you get us started?
This episode will include death of children and, classically, racism and queer phobia. Please don't engage with this episode if that would be harmful for you.
Yikes.
Also, start out the episode with a little reminder that people are not more likely to get murdered on Halloween or any other day of the year. There's no statistically significant difference for day of the year. Our first sampler case is the one that didn't occur on Halloween, but it is Halloween-related and also it's important as far as I'm concerned. Yoshihiro Hattori was a 16-year-old Japanese student in an exchange program who was living here in a homestay in Baton Rouge. He and his homestay brother, Webb Haymaker, had been invited to a party on October 17th, 1992. They went to that street and approached the wrong house.
So they were going to a party?
And they just knocked on the wrong door. It was like six doors down from the right door. So they approached the wrong house and they knock. No one answers, but a side door peeks open and there's a woman, one Bonnie Pierce, and upon seeing them, slams the door and shouts for her husband, Rodney Pierce, to get his gun. He runs out to the front door with his gun. Yoshihiro and Webb were stepping away, having realized this was not the right house, when Rodney comes out and he shouts, "Freeze," pointing his gun at Yoshihiro. It's unclear if Yoshihiro even knew what that meant because, you know, he spoke Japanese. So he supposedly continued moving forward towards Rodney. And so Rodney shot him in the chest and killed him.
He knocked on the door?
Yep. Don't worry, it gets better.
How could it get worse?
I can't speak.
Well, you see, Rodney, in the court case, the murder trial, he testified that Yoshihiro was a grinning, potentially crazed intruder. That's how he interpreted the behavior.
He was in high school.
How can you think a kid is threatening, ever?
Well, if you're Asian and dressed up as John Travolta from Saturday Night Fever. Let me repeat the quote again. A grinning, potentially crazed intruder.
That was outside on the front lawn and knock? Outrageous. Who knocks in this day and age?
It sounds like his lawyer wrote that.
Well, the lawyer wrote it right because he was acquitted.
Of course he was. Nothing happened to the other kid?
No, he just witnessed his friend get murdered. Factoid is Webb went to the neighbor to get help, and Bonnie and Rodney never emerged from their house until well after the cops had been there.
So he was going to a Halloween party and he was dressed up as John Travolta. Is this right before Halloween? Is it like the day before? Is it like the week before?
It was the 15th or 17th.
So it's still within 2 weeks of Halloween.
Yeah, yeah.
Where you start expecting, especially on the weekends, to have Halloween parties.
And it's a kid dressed in a Halloween costume.
It was the white suit. Every article made it very clear. I can't remember what Webb's costume was, but he had a neck brace on from a completely unrelated injury.
Did their parents get involved?
Yes. The slightest bright side that isn't even a bright side. Grasping at straws here. His parents, Masaichi and Miko, the whole sort of country was astounded by this because gun control in Japan is not the same as it is here.
Did this make, like, the news and media and, like, was there a lot of attention to it?
International news. So his parents, you know, would like him to be brought to justice, but he wasn't. So then there was a civil case, and Rodney was at least found liable for the death because he behaved unreasonably, and so he was told to pay them $650,000.
Did they actually pay? Because we know from Lena Chapin that just because you are told to pay money does not mean you've paid. I think Sandy was supposed to pay like over $1 million.
I don't know how much of it got paid, but they did use whatever money they did get. Weirdly, apparently you can have an insurance that will pay $100,000 of your murder money. I don't know. He had insurance money that covered $100,000 of it. He paid enough of it that they were able to start two organizations. One was a fund for high school students who'd like to visit Japan, and the other was to lobby for more gun control. In 93, Masaichi and Miko got to meet Bill Clinton as president in that they presented him with a petition signed with, I believe, 1.2 million Japanese signatures. And then a separate organization, I think, on that day presented like 500,000 signature petition. So they got to meet Clinton. That sort of token apology from the president to be like, I'm so sorry your son was killed. On a base emotional level is something. Know how YouTube just instantly picked up on the racism? None of the articles I read even a little bit addressed that this was a Japanese kid murdered.
I think that they disregarded it because there's not a violent stereotype associated with Asian people. But at the very least, even if you were to say, okay, well, they didn't assume that because he was Japanese, there's also this language barrier. Like, he obviously didn't even give him a chance to try and say something he would have realized. He was speaking a different language.
Okay, I'm already full, but bring us to the next appetizer.
Appetizer 2 is just a tiny bit addressing the fear of Halloween murders. This is the child death one, everyone, so stop listening now. On Halloween in 1974 in Houston, Texas, 8-year-old Timothy O'Brien and his father Ronald came home from trick-or-treating. Timothy wanted to eat some candy, and Ronald urged him to eat a pixie stick. Within minutes, Timothy was vomiting and convulsing and would die shortly thereafter at the hospital from cyanide poisoning.
No.
And that is why people still check their candy.
Yes, this is why I'm saying it. But hold on. Let me see why you shouldn't be paranoid. The authorities, I assume the cops, realized it was the pixie stick and went and retrieved them from the other children in the O'Brien household, and they were also laced with cyanide in order to poison.
It was from their own house.
Yes. The father, Ronald O'Brien, was tried and convicted of murder and attempted murder against all his children for his gambling debts. He took out insurance policies on them all, and suspiciously one died, and the others had cyanide-laced pixie sticks.
How sad.
As you can see, it's a myth that you have to watch out for poison candy. This is sort of the shining case of why you should be paranoid, but it was the family. There was no outside threat here.
There was a mom involved too?
It's unclear. Nothing mentioned her, and I only wanted to do a very little bit on this one.
She would have been convicted, and tried at least, too, if they had any evidence that she knew, or, you know, he could have been a single dad. Who knows?
Nothing specified that, so I just sort of assumed there's a mother there who's not involved.
How many children did he have?
Five total.
So they were able to save the other four.
I'm not sure if it's true. One of the other kids fell asleep holding the pixie stick. About to eat it, but I'm a child, so I fell asleep.
He called 911? You didn't make sure they all ate their pixie sticks before you called 911 about the child that passed?
He is the one who called 911, so he didn't. It's sort of, they're gonna eat him while I'm gone. Feels like you don't have to worry about children eating candy.
What state was this in?
Texas.
Is he dead?
Yeah. He was executed in, like, 81.
What year did this happen in?
The murder was 1974. Also, no one is giving your children drugs. Drugs are expensive. And the first one's free policy does not apply to 7-year-olds. So stop being paranoid about strangers poisoning and getting your kids hooked on drugs.
Hot take. You wouldn't have had to worry about your kids being poisoned before, but now, because it's out there and so many people have talked about it, so many psychopaths have the idea in their head, we have made it something that maybe you should be concerned about. It wasn't a concern until everyone started talking about how it was definitely a concern.
Damn, a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
Damn you. Also, how do one do an insurance, a life insurance policy on a child?
How did he think he was going to get away from that? Like, you pull out insurance policies on your children and then...
And then they just die and nobody's going to look at you?
They die of cyanide in your home and nobody's going to look at you.
Well, maybe that's why he gave them to all of his kids. Maybe he wasn't intending all of his kids to eat them. He just wanted them all to have them so that he could be like, they got him trick-or-treating.
Yeah, that was the story. Wow. Like, I don't know which house gave them to us.
It was like setting up an alibi. Was, all right, Russian roulette, whoever eats it.
No, there wasn't Russian roulette. They were all poisoned.
As soon as one of them or a certain amount of time had passed, it was just like whoever ends up eating the pixie stick, that was that. But he gave them all 50-50 shot of them eating it or not.
I don't think that's 50-50. I think that's way higher than 50-50.
I mean, that night before he called. Like, that specific night.
I mean, they're all going to eat it. They're children and candy.
Yeah.
It's shocking that the other four didn't eat it.
Right.
To me, it's not. I would never have went for a pixie sticks first.
Yeah, but eventually you would have.
No, probably not.
You would have threw it away?
No, I would have given it to my siblings and they would have had like double cyanide. No, seriously.
I mean, I'm not a pixie sticks person, but they were fun to like dare people to snort them.
I would trade most of my stuff for Twizzlers.
Twizzlers?
It's too much. And it has that sour burn thing after.
Of course, children are snorting the sugar.
Why are we passing out sugar candy to children? Ugh, don't get me started.
You gonna give them pennies, Grandpa? Boomer Mikey? A toothbrush?
I'm just saying, like, we used to get, like, pillowcases full of candy. Why are we feeding our children to a whole pillowcase full of candy?
Check your privilege, your two pillows full of candy.
Yeah, I didn't really think about that. There's, like, a giant portion of the U.S. that gets, like, a few pieces of candy. I've always lived in a city.
I certainly have never filled a pillowcase.
Oh my gosh.
Oh.
Multiple pillowcases.
Girl, go back for another pillowcase.
No, you put a pillowcase inside your pillowcase.
Yeah.
And then somebody has the backpack. When the pillowcase is full, it goes in the backpack.
Yep.
Down in Sedona, I'm thinking of specifically, it's uptown where it's sort of, there's no trick-or-treating really in the neighborhoods. It's uptown and the store owners do it.
Oh, it's like trunk-or-treat type of.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah, even switching costumes after a round and going back around.
If you went to a restaurant or a gas station or anywhere on Halloween, you got candy.
Donald's used to hand out the free vanilla cone coupons on Halloween.
Yep. Slurpee coupons.
That's how old we are. The ice cream machines used to work. I swear.
We broke them by getting coupons.
Yeah, we'd get so many coupons.
Family video.
7-Eleven.
Free rental. 7-Eleven, Slurpees. They only did that for a little bit. Then they just got hit too many times.
We've made a huge mistake.
Yeah.
We can't do the buffet model.
They had special cups that were specifically for Halloween, for the Slurpees, that were like smaller than a small.
Yeah.
Back in my day, the 7-Eleven.
Are you just mad? Because back in our day, we had two pillowcases full of candy, and you're just sitting there with your pretzels, crying into your pillowcase?
Into your pillowcase. Pretzels.
You had to work for it. You had to start right before it got dark, and you had to keep going. You had to walk for 3 hours. You just, every street.
Back in my day, you had to walk 15 miles uphill in the snow.
Go fuck yourself.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Take us into the next one, Chip.
We're at the main course now. My lectures are done, and here's, you know, slightly different lecture. In 1957 in L.A., Betty Fabiano and her husband, Peter Fabiano, were having troubles. So Betty moved out of her house with Peter and moved into her possibly just friends but probably queer friend, Joan Rabble. Joan Rabble worked at the beauty parlor that Peter owned, and she and Betty, over the course of 1957, had become friends. Joan had been a cafe photographer, and I bring this up just to ask what the fuck a cafe photographer is. Anyway, Betty eventually moved back in with Peter to try again. I would like to note that Betty was previously married and divorced, and now separating from her second husband, and I'm just very proud of Betty, because it's 1957, and you managed to get a divorce and were thinking about leaving the second one. I'm very proud of her. She's making healthy choices in 1957.
Just a note really quick. It seems that at some point, restaurant photography in general was called cafe photography. So it's possible that it's also like plating and things for menus.
Mm-hmm.
Like menu photography. I don't know. Sorry, keep going.
And in the '50s in diners and cafes, that's what it was, just pictures. Like lots of pictures on the menu. But anyway, yeah,
very little detail.
You win. This was I did not bother Googling it because I didn't care. So a lot of the articles I read did not hold back on their queerphobia. You know, there was plenty describing Joan as obsessed and crazed and, you know, all those classics. The relationship between Betty and Joan was described as abnormal, which we all know means gal pals.
Great.
So we are told that Joan felt that Peter was abusive and she wanted Betty to get out of the abusive relationship with Peter. And there are other ways to spin it. When Peter and Betty did get back together, allegedly, Peter demanded Betty never see Joan again. His marriage is threatened right now by the friends. So, in the affair sense, that's fair. Don't hang out with the affair person.
And maybe she was just seeking out a friend.
It literally could be that they were just really good friends.
And Joan wanted, maybe wanted more, maybe didn't.
And that the unnatural, was just the media... making it that way to make it more or less guilty, or like change the perception that like, oh, she was cheating on her husband.
Possibly just friends. While all of this was going down, Joan also meets Goldine Pizer. So Joan is talking with Goldine and telling her how evil Peter is and how he's abusive and the way he has control over Betty and how much he deserves to be dead. And wouldn't it be good if he was dead? What if he was murdered? We should murder Peter. When, later on, Goldine confesses to the crime, she spins it as Joan planned the whole murder. Goldine was under her spell. Joan had cast a spell on her. Joan had dominated her. One of the quotes from the newspaper. I don't know if Goldine said that in the newspaper, but someone said that Joan dominated Goldine.
Sweetie, that's too much information. Just, you can keep some things to yourself.
You're confessing to murder. As Goldine says it, the two of them, Joan convinces Goldine that we should murder him. Joan makes the whole plan. She says, we'll do it on Halloween so that you can wear a disguise and that's not suspicious. See, I did the thing you wanted. Joan buys the costume and gives Goldine money to go buy a gun. Joan, like, scouts it out and then says, Goldine, go buy that gun over there. So it's on Halloween. Joan borrows a friend's car and picks up Goldine. They drive over to the Fabiano house. They wait until the lights go out. And then Goldine puts the gun in a paper bag and wears the masks and goes and knocks on the door. Peter opens the door and she shoots him. And he falls down dead on arrival when the cops get there. Joan and Goldine take off in the car. They burn the costume. And when Joan leaves, Joan tells Goldine, forget you ever knew me. Like, the next day, Goldine realizes she's still got the gun. Fuck! What should I do with this murder weapon? So she goes and rents a storage locker in a department store, puts the gun in there, and a couple weeks later, an anonymous tip leads the cops to that locker.
Who the fuck was the tip?
Anyone who works there, why would you put a gun in a locker?
Yeah, but the way that lockers were set up, I mean, I'm guessing you would wait until no one's around.
I mean, I assume that she at least didn't do.
But why would you put in a locker under your name?
That's what I'm saying. She's under the spell.
Was it Joan who told her?
Joan didn't give her any specific instructions for disposing of the weapon, and that's Goldine panicking.
Goldine didn't communicate that with anybody?
Whoever saw her put it in the locker or whatever, she was scared and confused without Joan to tell her what to do, so it went bad real quick. They were arrested, and initially, Joan pleaded not guilty, and Goldine pleaded not guilty by way of insanity. Eventually, they'd strike a plea bargain and were guilty of second-degree murder and sentenced to 5 years to life in prison. And after that, we don't really know what happened to Joan. There's nothing about her. Every article I read was like, we couldn't find out what happened to Joan. Goldine was out of prison by 71 when she was working somewhere, blah, blah, blah. And I also couldn't find how Betty felt about this entire situation. There was nothing that was like, she was distraught over the death of her husband, or she was making the googly eyes at Joan while in the courtroom, or did she mastermind the plan?
Nothing.
You would think that any good lawyer for the defense would have Betty testify that there was abuse, that they would at least try and get her on the stand, subpoena her. I can't imagine a world where a lawyer wouldn't do that unless that lawyer was appointed.
And she was never named a suspect either?
Nope. Not that I know. That's weird too. I mean, it was sort of easy to verify she didn't kill him.
Yeah, but she could have had something to do with it.
Yep, she could have.
She lived with the person who murdered him recently.
And you see, technically, Goldine pulled the trigger, but they were both tried for murder. That did not save Joan. It wasn't really well reported on at the time, well enough to get the juicy details. Like, anything from Betty.
I mean, either way, Joan's an accomplice to murder.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
If nothing, she drove the getaway car. Or well, you mean Betty? Bought, who knows?
She bought the gun.
Goldine probably, bought the gun. But Joan paid for the gun.
Right.
She gave her the money. Go buy that gun, sweetie.
Wow.
What was her Halloween costume?
It was like khakis and a mask. It was late at night, I think like 11-ish. 11 sounds right. And so most of the trick-or-treaters have been done. And their lights are out. They're going to bed. Knock at the door. Betty's like, go answer the fucking door. And Peter goes down. And I don't know how we know specifically this is said, but when he opens the door, Peter says, isn't it a little late to be trick-or-treating? And Goldine supposedly says, no, and pulls the trigger.
Straight out of a movie.
It does seem like the plot of a Lifetime movie.
Yeah, totally.
Truly.
100%. I don't know if my lights are off in my house, I don't know if I'm opening the door. I'm seeing who it is first, like,
the lights are off at my house, I am not opening the door. I'm probably out of candy.
Well, even not on Halloween, I'm not going to. Like, I'm going to look out my window or look out my pier window or do something to see before I open that door.
But it could be maybe Betty was in on it and I just ad-libbed saying, go get the fucking door. What if she did say, no, no, you should go answer the door. What if the children need a candy? I have no evidence to support that, but I have no evidence against it. Goldine died in 98 at the age of 83. Betty died in 99 at the age of 81. Far as I'm concerned, Joan lives on traveling the world as a queer femme fatale.
Come on.
End of episode.
End of episode. That's just it. Cut it.
Cut to silence right there.
It was good.
Yeah, those were three very distinct, very different sets of circumstances, for sure. The way that people talk about Halloween, talk about kidnapping, talk about murder around Halloween, that idea that because Halloween is quote-unquote spooky, going back to the statistics that you mentioned at the top of the episode, the reality of how Halloween was even relevant in these cases was all very different, and none of them were the telltale things the feelings around Halloween would suggest.
The classic serial killer of Halloween, the movie Halloween.
As always, the links to all of these cases are in our show notes. Also, make sure that you subscribe on the platform of your choice. Until next time, I'm Mo.
I'm Mikey.
And I'm Chip.
God damn it, guys.